This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This advertisement feature is paid and presented by Go Türkiye. This is what most people come to Antalya for: beach, sun, and not much else. And that's fine. But head inland just a little and you can experience a different kind of Antalya. At Köprülü Canyon National Park, one of Türkiye's most accessible places for adventure sports and personal favorite spot of local guide Berfin Özçelik.
You can spend your whole day here. First, you should go to the canyon to do rafting. But there is so much more than that.
Yes, it's not just adrenaline that's to be found in these hills. High above the river, the pillars of Adam Rock surround the ruins of Selge, an ancient city that's been here far longer than the rafting routes.
Selge is like a gem waiting to be discovered.
So it's not exactly what you expected from a day in Antalya, but that's exactly the point. Plan your next detour at goturkiye.com today.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parrott. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
No one quite does populism like Latin America. On the left, there was Castro in Cuba and Chavez in Venezuela. On the right, there was Bolsonaro of Brazil and, longer ago, Juan Perón of Argentina. And that country has just entered the second year of the presidency of Javier Milei, the man who promised to take a chainsaw to Argentina's institutions and illustrated this by wielding a real chainsaw. Milei's progress has been watched eagerly by populists and others abroad to see if his radical economic solutions will work. And as of now, there's some evidence that they may be. So, what has Milei been up to? Is his plan succeeding? And whether it is or not, what are the lessons for the rest of us? Step into the briefing room and together we'll find out. First, how did the state of Argentina's economy set the stage for the election of Milei? Joining me is Monica de Bols, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. Monica de Bols, was Argentina always an economic basket case?
No, it wasn't. Argentina actually was a very rich country in the early 20th century. Things started to turn after the Second World War. There was a moment in time when Argentina basically decided to reorient the entire structure of the country, both politically and economically. It was in the process of this movement towards industrialization, the need to develop manufacturing sectors, because Argentina was essentially a commodity exporter for a very long time. Politically, it was always in turmoil. So it had dictatorships, it went back to democracy, went back to dictatorship. It's been a democracy for quite some time now, but nonetheless, it's a young democracy. So it's still very politically turbulent. And then on top of that, there was a lot of economic turmoil as well, because these past administrations, they were not very good at keeping things in balance, economically speaking. And they had a tendency to run up spending, so to spend too much, and then not have the means to cover that spending. So then Argentina would run up huge amounts of debt. And then that debt would prove to be unsustainable. The country would not be able to pay it back. And then it would have a debt crisis coupled with a currency crisis usually. And this situation just kept on happening. So there are two primary things in Argentina that need to be very clearly understood. One of them is Argentina has a structural problem when it comes to spending because of the political and institutional arrangements within the country. And in particular, the issue of autonomous provinces that can basically spend and run up debt on their own. That's a massive structural problem for Argentina that they have to resolve. They have not solved it, and that's something that is still potentially problematic for them in the medium term. The second big problem that they have, which they also haven't resolved and is also structural, is that the population still does not trust their own currency. So Argentina is a country that functions with two currencies, the dollar and the peso. And that's very problematic when you're trying to administer economic policy in general and monetary policy in particular.
Argentina had a very particular form of dictatorship, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. The first person who really made big changes to Argentina's system was Juan Domingo Perón. Perón was both a democratically elected leader as well as a dictator who was in power for a very long time. He instituted all the labor legislations. He instituted the minimum wage. He made it possible for urban workers who at the time had no protections whatsoever to have those protections. Protections for rural workers also came in around that time. After the period when Perón was in power, Argentina was basically a different country. It was a commodity export. Yeah, that's all it did. After Perón, Argentina was still a commodity exporter, of course, but it did have manufacturing as well.
So we've got up to, let's say, the year 2000. What was the state of the Argentinian economy by then?
It was not good. So Argentina had in its history, as I said, a whole bunch of crises, and those problems were not addressed. Rather, what Argentina kept on trying to do was to stave off those problems by running up more and more and greater levels of debt. All of this became completely unsustainable in the early 2000s. And then in 2001, Argentina had the biggest financial crisis of its history. It was a banking crisis, a currency crisis, and a debt crisis at the same time, left the country in a very, very terrible situation. But then after that, the commodity boom came for everybody. And because Argentina, as we said, has always been a commodity exporter, it benefited greatly from the commodity price boom. Because that boom was so long-lasting, Argentina actually managed to get by without having a financial crisis until about 2016, 2017. I mean, it had some problems along the way. And so before 2015, it was heading in the direction of a crisis. The country had an election, changed course, the crisis was staved off, but it wasn't enough. And so a couple of years later, around 2017, the country was in dire straits again.
So that's the period leading up to Milei's election win. Yes. So what was actually happening in the economy up until the point when he was elected?
The debt was very high, and Argentina was having to make debt payments, which were quite large. All these debt payments were in US dollars. And so Argentina needed to have the international reserves or the dollars to be able to pay the debt, but it was running out of those dollars and had been running out of those dollars for some time. At the same time, fiscal deficits were extremely high, and the central bank was actively financing that deficit. So in other words, you know, Argentina was basically printing pesos to finance these very high deficits, which is a completely unsustainable situation. And it feeds inflation. So when Milei was campaigning, Argentina was in the middle of a hyperinflation again, so something it had not seen since the 1980s.
What was happening to government spending?
So government spending was very high and completely out of control. So the situation in Argentina as Milei was campaigning and later coming into office was one where, you know, government accounts were deeply in the red. And provincial accounts, in some cases, were also deeply in the red. So when you then combine the whole situation, it looked really bad.
Monica de Bol. As we've heard, by the time of Argentina's elections last November, the country was in deep trouble and inflation was rising rapidly. Enter Javier Milei. Here to tell me more about Milei and his economic thinking is Tyler Cowan, Professor of Economics at George Mason University, Virginia. Tyler Cowan, when we talk about Javier Milei, in terms of his economic philosophy, what is he?
Milei is essentially a libertarian. He believes in a minimum of government in a well-functioning society, And at times, he's even suggested that he's actually an anarchist.
How does that work in economic terms?
Well, it's not something Millet could ever practically do. But I think at some philosophical level, he thinks the market does better than the government at virtually all functions of life. And that makes him a pretty radical leader of a country. But it's important to note that when he actually governs, he's been governing as a pragmatist. So he's kept capital controls on the Argentinian economy. That's not a libertarian point of view. But again, if you're a leader of a country, you have to do, you know, what it takes to survive. And I think he's been quite adaptive, in fact.
Which economists have influenced Millet? We know famously that Milton Friedman influenced Margaret Thatcher. Has Friedman been an influence on Millet and who else?
Friedman has been an influence, yes, but more importantly, Ludwig Mises of the Austrian School of Economics and Murray Rothbard. Rothbard was a very radical libertarian. Millet repeatedly has expressed his admiration for Rothbard. And Rothbard's view was, in fact, a literal kind of anarchism. Let's have government not do anything at all. Ludwig Mises was an economist from Austria. He was considered an uncompromising advocate of laissez-faire. He had a sort of fiery manner in print and basically thought the key to prosperity was to limit the role of government in the economy.
Could you just explain how this differs from other economic schools of thought? What would a Keynesian make of Murray Rothbard?
Well, a Keynesian typically would argue for a fairly large government, a mixed economy, and that when you have downturns, you get out of the downturn by having the government spend more money. Many economists agree with that, but in the case of Argentina, the key problem is that they've run out of money. So there's not really a Keynesian recipe available to them. They need to look to other directions. One way or another, they need to cut government spending and limit the hyperinflation they've been having. And Millet actually has been doing that, and with great success.
That takes us on to the question of what, in Millet's view, was wrong with Argentina's economy.
The government was spending too much. It was at about 43% of GDP. And to finance that spending, because they weren't taking in enough taxes, they had to keep on printing money. So Argentina, when he started, had triple-digit inflation. And now he's gotten that down to just a little over 2% a month. That's a lot of progress. And it has to be considered a success. He's also eliminated the budget deficit, which again is a big success.
Could you just tell us, relatively, 43% of GDP for government spending doesn't seem that high in European terms.
Well, the poorer your country, the harder it is to afford a lot of government. And Argentina in particular does not have a very effective apparatus for collecting taxes. So if you're spending 43% of GDP and can't take in that much money, what you end up with is hyperinflation, and that's what Argentina had.
Can you just explain that mechanism to me?
If you print money, the government takes the money and spends the money on what it wants to buy. But every period, that keeps on injecting new money into the economy, and that's going to raise the rate of price inflation. There's just far too much new money coming into the economy. So you either have to raise taxes a lot, or cut spending a lot, or some mix of both, to avoid the hyperinflation. So Millet put into practice a kind of adjustment plan based on IMF principles. And again, so far, it's been going quite well.
What did he actually promise when he came into power?
He promised many things. He did promise he would limit hyperinflation. He also promised he would dollarize the economy, make the US dollar the currency. That is not happening and probably cannot happen. They simply don't have enough dollars. If they had enough dollars, they wouldn't be broke to begin with.
What would have been the advantage, in his view, of dollarizing the economy? It's not something that we know much about here.
Well, Ecuador, Panama, and El Salvador all have dollarized their economies. That is, they just use the US dollar. They get our monetary policy, roughly our rate of inflation. They get a stable currency. It works when you can do it, but being able to do it is the trick. Because again, you need a lot of dollars to make it work. It's estimated he would need about 30 billion extra US dollars to dollarize his economy. And again, where are those going to come from?
Now, cutting inflation involved several things. And as you said, you have several options, such as hugely increasing taxes and significantly cutting government spending. Can you take us through what he's actually done?
Well, mostly he has cut spending. Being a libertarian, he doesn't want to raise taxes. But also, it's very hard to raise taxes when a lot of Argentinian wealth is squirreled away in bank accounts in Miami or somewhere else. So it's led to an economic recession, cutting government spending. But the recession is now over. JP Morgan forecasts that Argentina will grow by more than 5% the next year. The currency has performed very well. The stock market has performed well. So it at least seems at the moment that Argentina is at its turning point.
When we talk about it, if you like, in a sort of macro way, it seems quite easy to do. It's when you dig into the details that you get the problem, like who gets cut and who gets poorer.
The citizens suffer a great deal, and you see that in Argentina. Poverty rates are up. But I think the key point is the government is running out of money. So if you don't cut something now, you're going to cut much more later. So, it's not like British austerity where there's a choice, there's a debate, but your nation was solvent. Here, there's been no choice. What Milei has done is not so different from what, say, the IMF would recommend. The IMF basically endorsed his adjustment plan. They're giving him additional loans. The finance and economics team he appointed, you would certainly say they were small c conservative, but they were not radical libertarians. They're technocrats. And he's kept his eye focused on a lot of details.
Tyler Cowan.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parrott. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.
So how are Milei's policies panning out in Argentina? And what can we expect in the future? Here with me is Pablo Castro, Professor of Micro and Macroeconomics at Buenos Aires University, and joining us again is Monica de Bol. Pablo, you live in Argentina. Can you tell us what it's like to live with very high inflation?
It's very different depending on where you are in society. I think that's something very important. It definitely hurts a lot more poorer people who don't have as many mechanisms. If you are in the richer part of a population, you know, you'd figure out how much you want to spend the first week, and you'd convert your wages or invest them in such a way to protect what you've earned for that month, convert them into hard currency, right? Dollars, we use dollars all the time. Whereas if you're, you know, poorer and maybe you get cash instead of having access to the banking system, then it's a real problem. Everything moves so quickly. Just to give you an example, right? When you hear discussion wages in the UK, you hear, you know, the government arguing for an extra percent or two for public servants or nurses or what have you. Over there, you're having, you know, monthly or maybe quarterly discussions, and the government will offer, you know, 25%, and the unions will want 45%. So a lot of uncertainty, I would say. That's a key thing, is that there's a lot of uncertainty. Companies will plan for higher margins to cope with the uncertainty of not knowing what things are going to be, you know, 2 months down the line.
Do companies under these circumstances try to relocate to other places with lower inflation?
Yeah, to some extent, to the extent that inflation kills the financial system in a way, right? Because a domestic financial system, because the domestic currency is so unreliable, then you can't borrow, then obviously that kills investment from businesses. So that happened a lot during 2022 and 3. That we saw a number of businesses move out of a country or end operations. Having said that, there's a lot of mechanisms, and companies are much more savvy than individual customers.
How do people there, ordinary people there, feel that Milei's first year has gone? Do they think that he's delivering on what he promised?
I think to a large extent they do. Look at opinion polls, up 50%, depending on which poll you pick, it'll be between 45 and 55% approval rate, which is fairly high for a president 1 year into his term. Having said that, he also has a lot of people that kind of hate him, but I would say majority feel that probably has over-delivered more than what they expected, yes.
What do they feel that they're seeing by way of delivery?
Inflation coming down is obviously the main thing he wanted to do, and he's done it. So I think a lot of people appreciate that.
Monica, could you take us through the policies that Milei has actually implemented and what the impact of those policies has been insofar as we can measure them?
So on the fiscal front, one of the first things Milei did was to basically correct the institutional makeup of the relations between the central bank and the treasury, such that there no longer could be any kind of financing, direct or indirect, by the central bank for the treasury. So in other words, no more deficit financing. And that, of course, was one big driver of inflation, not the only one. The other driver of inflation, of course, was exchange rate devaluation. And because Milei set in motion a whole bunch of reforms that attracted or made things look a little bit better for Argentina, so that situation managed to calm markets down. And in fact, you know, international investors started coming back to Argentina. They had fled in the months before, and they started coming back because they saw the situation as being on the mend or on the road towards improvement. And so that led to, again, an inflow of dollars to Argentina, which of course is always a big relief when that happens there. And once that happened, the exchange rate, which had devalued by quite a bit, came down somewhat. And so that helped inflation along as well. Argentina still has inflation and it's still high on a monthly basis, but it's come down very substantially from where it was right before Milei was elected.
Now, one of the other things that people of Milei's economic leanings believe in is deregulation, because they think it helps to grow the economy. Has he done much on that front?
He's created an entire government department for deregulation. Just to give you, you know, one example that was very vivid and affected a lot of people was the law for rental. When you rent a property, there was a very strict law that was very inconvenient in a high inflation environment and had the impact of reducing dramatically the supply of properties in the market. So they completely changed. They allow people to negotiate contracts freely. They allow people to denominate them in whatever currency they want, however they wanted to adjust rent and so on. And in an inflationary environment, that makes a huge difference. And we had, you know, the supply of houses available in the market in the city of Buenos Aires expanded by, I can't remember, 70%, something crazy. So in real terms, it's come down, the value of rent.
Right. So that is a very good example. Pablo, Milei's cut public spending a lot. What has he cut?
So the main things that the federal government controls and that he has cut are pensions. They're about 30% of the total consolidation came from that. Public works, subsidies, so energy subsidies.
Was that energy subsidy to individuals or to companies?
That's to individuals. And, you know, maybe just for you UK listeners, maybe they're thinking of like winter fuel or something like that. But I'm thinking of like my friend's heated swimming pool that he would have at 30 degrees in the winter because it's so cheap, because you would only pay like $20 a month, you know, for your electricity bill and you'd be wasting it.
Pablo, here in the UK, after 1979, we also went through a counterinflationary strategy, which led to a significant recession. Has there been a recession in Argentina as a result of these policies? And what's now happening to growth?
So there was a recession. The recession actually started even before Milei came into place. So last quarter of 23. First two quarters of 24 were very recessive, and a number of industries, especially those industries geared towards domestic consumption, suffered quite a bit. Having said that, last quarter was very strong growth. I think it was 3.9% growth, and that's not an annualized figure. That's actual growth in only in one quarter. I mean, everybody's forecasting growth. I'm a little bit more skeptic on like the kind of numbers that people are forecasting, around 5% for next year. I think it'll, you know, at the very least should be around 3.
This is incredibly quick.
Yes, it's an incredibly quick turnaround, yes.
How do you explain that?
It's a great question. I think a lot of it comes from two main sectors. One, agriculture, that suffered a lot last year under a very significant drought. And the second one is the oil and gas sector, which is booming right now in Argentina and is increasing the exports and the amounts of oil available for external trade.
I presume that there have been significant casualties from these policies, as well as the benefits that we've spoken about. Who and where have people suffered and why?
That's a very good question, and it's one that is somewhat tricky to answer. It is a fact that poverty has increased, and this poverty situation in Argentina is either going to generate at some point political turmoil and social turbulence, or it's going to get resolved. The way I see it right now, it's looking more like a political turbulence, social turbulence kind of scenario, simply because it's hard to see how Argentina is going to sustain the levels of growth that it needs.
Argentina is a poor country compared to the UK or most of Europe, let's say, but it's a rich country compared to most developing countries. So our poverty line is really much higher than most poverty lines around the world. When Milei came in, poverty was around 43% using that line. And after the first quarter, it jumped to, say, about 53. And the question right now is it gone down to something like 47? Pensions have been cut. So we have more pensioners who are poor, for example, compared to the past. And the growth is not even across the country, right? So when you look at Milei's political support, it definitely matches, or it has a close correlation with the areas where we're seeing growth, which is all these provinces in the interior of Argentina that benefit from oil, mining, agriculture, and things like that. And whereas in the city of Buenos Aires, or the greater Buenos Aires, which is about a third of the population, those are the places where you have the lowest, you know, support for the present, and also maybe the bigger problems with poverty or with not seeing growth and solution towards that. Having said that, you know, when Milei came in, everybody said, well, this is an impossible plan. Some of the leaders of the opposition said, you know, he's going to be out by April. And they were expecting a lot more social backlash and a lot more tension, which hasn't materialized. And it is, for me, hard to see how it would materialize now that things are actually getting better. The one thing that nobody or very few believed could be done was to govern without any sort of majority in Congress. He only has like 1/6 of the lower house and maybe, you know, less in the Senate even. So he's managed to build coalitions, both for passing the main law, but more importantly, to sustain vetoes where the opposition has tried to initiate law in parliament to force the government to spend more in pensions, spend more in universities and things like that. And he has managed to build coalitions in there to hold the line.
Can I just take it away from Argentina for a moment? Because you've laid out very well what the challenges still are. Do you think, Pablo, because you will speak to people from other countries, that Milei is now going to be a kind of poster boy for other countries? Or do you think people will regard Argentina as being a case apart?
It will ultimately depend on whether his policies are successful in Argentina. I mean, the first year has been better than most expected, but, you know, risks still remain. I think other countries will look at, can we improve, but only if he is successful in the longer term.
Monica, what do you think?
Well, certainly not in the United States. That is the one country that is looking at to Milei and thinking, wow, maybe we can cut all of these government jobs and, you know, do this downsizing of the governments. And, you know, the incoming administration has at least a couple of people that have that view. And
you're talking about Elon Musk here.
I am talking about Elon Musk, exactly. I do think that there's a complete misunderstanding of the situation in Argentina simply because it's had such a unique history. And this is why this country has faced crises over and over again. The United States is not facing an imminent fiscal, financial, or any kind of other crisis in the same way that Argentina was when Milei came in. These two countries are worlds apart in terms of how they have evolved. I mean, the United States is the issuer of the global reserve currency, the US dollar. So it can't be compared to Argentina. So I do think that, you know, while this experiment in Argentina is very interesting in a number of ways, it's applicable to Argentina and Argentina only.
Well, that's it from us. My thanks to Monica Dubol, Pablo Castro, and Tyler Cowan. And my conclusion, irritatingly, it seems a bit too early to have one. Now, just a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the Briefing Room podcast by visiting BBC Sounds, and you'll get access to the entire back catalogue, which includes the one about the changing nature of warfare, and the three looking at the future of health, and the one about how much interest and influence China has in the UK. You've been listening to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. The producers were Beth Ashmead-Latham, Kirsty Knight and Charlotte MacDonald. The sound engineer was Neil Churchill. The editor is Richard Varden. Another edition of this podcast will be along again soon. Goodbye and happy Christmas.
Sean Diddy Combs has occupied a top spot in the music industry for decades. He earned his stripes during the golden age of hip-hop, and he's been called rap royalty. Now, Diddy sat in jail awaiting trial. He denies all the allegations. I'm Anushka Mittanda-Dawati, and from BBC Sounds, this is Diddy on Trial. Every week, I'll be examining the latest allegations, interrogating the rumours, and answering your questions. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Paris. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.